You're listening to the Purdue Basketball Beat, a part of the Boiled Sports Podcast Network. And now, Michael, Andy, and the Swami.
Hello and welcome again to the Purdue Basketball Beat. This is Michael with Andy Nanish. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great.
We get some applause. Yeah. I mean, I was doing okay, but I'm not doing applause good.
I think it's about time that we start filming these in front of a live audience.
It's true.
My mom says she's available. She can listen in and laugh.
My mom says that she's no longer interested in being a
Oh, we lost our... So that leaves us with two? Is that right?
Yeah. Manish, your mom?
Yeah, listen, I hosted a radio show in high school, and my mom listened maybe once. So there isn't evidence that she enjoys my presence, but sure, we can count her.
Anish, does a day ever go by that you don't mention that you hosted your own radio show in high school?
Did I tell you that...
was that your first line when you meet girls?
Did I tell you that Jeff Rabjohns called me once?
Left you a voicemail.
What's that?
Right, Andy?
Oh. Okay, are we still rolling? Or are we...
We're rolling.
No, we're rolling.
This is gold. Okay, so we haven't actually plugged the Boiled Sports Podcast Network yet, have we? Are we legally obligated to at least mention it three times?
Contractually, only every other episode, but I'll mention that. We are part of the Boiled Sports Radio Network.
But I would like to preface with the fact that the Handsome Hour, they did call us the JV team.
That's true. And,
but here's the thing, though. We target a different audience. We target kind of a more younger, hipper, kind of that all-important 18 to 30 demo.
They can be ESPN and we'll be Deadspin.
We target that before hip transplant patient. You know.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say they appeal to the segment that goes to like the Golden Corral at like 4 p.m.
Listen, if you go before 5, you get a great deal.
and you get home in time to watch Murder, She Wrote. So it is hard to turn down.
Hey, Diagnosis Murder is my jam.
So anyways, we do actually have some things to talk about. I think we do.
Maui, we have lots of things NC to talk
State,
about.
And it's actually nice to be positive, you know? I feel if we kind of compartmentalize basketball, it's a pretty awesome feeling.
I feel like with this team I keep putting up like reasons why they're going to let me down based on the past 3 seasons. And after the Kansas State game, they've passed every sort of test. You know, you lose a tough game to Kansas State, you know, you worry about falling apart against Missouri. They didn't. They beat the bricks off Missouri. Then you worry about a letdown after a big win, and they don't. They beat a good BYU team. I mean, each sort of thing that could go wrong, they end up turning around and playing pretty well.
So yeah. Is there anyone – I know we gave our predictions of what would be happy. I mean, is there anyone that wouldn't say this was a successful trip?
No, absolutely. I think this is definitely a success. I think I only said like one win, like one or one win that and looking good, I think was my baseline. And I mean, we've, you know, just because, again, I'm so used to just being stabbed in the face repeedly. But I think this was a very successful trip. And you know, I think they showed it. We'll talk about this after, but I think they showed it. You know, afterwards in the ACC, the Big Ten ACC tournament against NC State. But yeah, definitely success.
I think the consensus was one win in the winner's bracket and two in the losers was a metric for success. And yeah, they got the two in the losers bracket, and how they did it was really encouraging as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I like to speak in hyperboles, but I would say though that the tournament, for the most part, it kind of put Purdue basketball back on the map. And I know that this is, you know, overselling it, but I think it was the first time a lot of national folks got to see Haas and Edwards. And I think, you know, they've been continuing to tune in, and I've heard nothing but you know, positive things in the media.
I think if you're an NBA draft nerd, you probably noticed Haas getting just a little bit of attention post Maui from some people who follow that sort of stuff. And I'm not saying he's, you know, he's definitely not a one and done, and, you know, he's probably a 3 or 4 year player, but just to have another guy on the NBA roster, and he earned it, or on the NBA radar rather, and he earned it. I mean, he played exceptionally well.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And maybe more than our play is that we have people to get excited about. We have individuals to get excited about. And I know that some of the college purists might be, you know, disappointed when you say it like that. But it's fun to watch a team and have like be able to like be able to focus in on one person or two people, like a selection of two or three people, and just say, these are the guys that I'm watching, especially with some of these national guys like Fran Fraschilla or John Rothstein that do a great job, but they cover all 300 and some odd teams in the country. So there has to be a reason to watch Purdue other than, you know, like if we grind out wins, but we don't really have people to get excited about. I mean, basically every person coming into the season knew about AJ Hammons. I think every like reporter or analyst out there knew who AJ Hammons was. And I think, like you guys said, after Maui, the big revelation is that everybody knows who Isaac Haas is, and most people know who Vince Edwards is. So it's cool to have those individuals that get Purdue some of the spotlight, and it's well deserved, very well deserved.
You know, especially in context to. And I think Michael, I think you said this at the beginning of the season, and it's such a cliche at this point, is like, we go as AJ Hammond goes. And I think it's starting to show that that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, more so than just individual players to get excited about, too, you know, I think Fran Fraschilla made a comment that watching this Purdue team play, it was nice to see them play like a Matt Painter team.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that. And smiled.
That was a really good comment. You know, that was a really encouraging thing to read. So
it's definitely great to be not a joke, you know, and not just be in the headlines for, you know, some kind of chemistry concerns, or, you know, be in the headlines for Matt Painter having his job on the hot seat or whatever. So
And speaking of a Matt Painter team, I think it's kind of exciting to actually see us get a little bit of a defensive identity back. Mm-hmm, and not only that, but and this is, I think, one of the most underrated points, or I guess takeaways from the Maui Invitational, is we're starting to get a lockdown defender in Rafael Davis. And that's, you know, we haven't had that since, I can't even think of the last time we had somebody that can they can you know, shut somebody down, and he's proven that he's gonna be that guy that, you know, can guard the top scorer of the opposing teams.
He's sort of figured out that there's a lot of ways that he can impact a game, and that it's important to focus on all of it. Because, you know, when he came in as a freshman, he was primarily known as a scorer, because that's pretty much what Southside, it was him and, you know, everybody else who wasn't very good. And even at Lathamere, he sort of took on that role of being a scorer, and that was kind of his reputation. But then he's starting now to contribute by rebounding well, playing excellent defense, being a good passer, being a very vocal leader, which is something this team has lacked for a number of years. So it's good to see him, even when certain parts of his game, namely the shooting, haven't really been going his way, to see him impact the game positively in other ways.
Absolutely. That's something I took away from Maui too, is that I wrote in my preseason previews, like individual previews for all the people that were coming back, that we had a lot of wing depth, you know, like between Vince Edwards was penciled in as a starter. Even this summer, he was penciled in as a starter. Painter said nothing but good things about Dakota Mathias. And then you have, you know, the point guard situation. You have John Octius coming in and hit the possibility of him or Bryson Scott sliding over to the two. Ray Davis had to find some way other than intangible leadership to stay on the floor, because the fact is, even though he's captain, he's not the most talented player on the team, and it's tough when you're put in that position, because even though the coach wants to keep you in for leadership, if there's nothing basketball wise, if there's no reason to keep you in, he can't. It's like a Travis Carroll situation last year. So I think him starting to rely on his defense and maybe a little bit more playmaking is somewhere he has to improve a little bit more, but at least on the offensive side. But if he can be counted on as the ace defender, that's the way he gets minutes, and that's the way he's justified in playing in crunch time.
And to his credit, too, can you imagine how hard – I mean, he was just like Bryson Scott, where he averaged 25 points a game.
Yeah.
I mean, he shot high volume, you know, game in and game out. And it's not always easy for someone who's used to shooting that to change their, you know, change the way that they play and their role on the team. Mm-hmm. And I think we kind of see – I think not to – and I don't mean this in a negative way, but, you know, Bryson and Rafael, I guess they kind of have opposite approaches. And I think with Bryson, you kind of see how it is difficult to – you know, change that skill set.
Those two are remarkably similar in a lot of ways. You know, Rafael had a reputation as a high schooler as being a bit of a hothead.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one tweet from, I think it was Jeff Borzello
sure.
At a AAU event that was like, the tweet was something to the effect of, tell me if you've heard this one before, Rafael Davis gets a technical. and Bryson Scott has, you know, a little bit of that same sort of mentality too. And I think what's allowed Davis to be successful is that he's channeled that energy and intensity and pointed it sort of inward, you know, to challenge himself to be a better player and then express that positively to his teammates. And I think Bryson Scott will get there too. I mean, it's like you said, it's not an easy process, but he'll get there as well.
I think another person you're seeing. So I think we have three people like this who are, you know, residuals from last year, that last year's kind of identityless team, that are kind of, you know, in varying degrees of struggling to find their place on the team. And I think Basil Smotherman is the other guy. He doesn't have, none of them have, like this signature on the court thing, like, you know, like Ray, I guess, will have his defense and hopefully it stays like that. But really, Ray's thing is leadership. Bryson's is being a dog on defense and just putting all of his energy into that full court press, making the other point guard's life hell. Like, that's his calling card. And Basil Smotherman is just the baseline assassin, right? He's just going.
No, he's the wild card.
He's the wild card. That's right. So they have to find other ways to contribute, because when you have a team full of, you know, legitimate weapons and John Octius, Vince Edwards, Kendall Stevens, Haas, Hammonds, even Dakota Mathias, who seems to be more comfortable in his role, it's like you have to be comfortable without the ball. You have to be comfortable crashing the boards. And for some of it, you have to be comfortable saving all of your energy for defense and not right. necessarily getting a payoff on the offensive end. So that's kind of that's the transition they have to make. And I'm sure they can all do it. They're all, I think we don't have one like bad bone on this team, you know? So I like him. And I think, was it Dowd or Jay, one of the guys running the Bullet Sports Twitter, said that this was their favorite team in a long time, just because of how deep it is and how many like good personalities mm-hmm. are on the team. And
Matt Painter actually echoed that as well. I think in Maui, during one of his press conferences, he said that this was a fun team for him to coach and mm-hmm. that he really liked being around these guys. And so that's good to hear, which brings us to the NC State game. So Maui was... Purdue left Maui on a high, you yep. know, beating a NCAA tournament team in BYU. And now you turn around without Bryson Scott and play an NC State team that has always been more talented than they've been good, if that makes any mm-hmm. sense. Like, you know, Mark Gottfried is good at recruiting. He's a very good recruiter. He gets a lot of really raw athletic guys in there, but they don't really seem to make a ton of noise. And this team looked to provide a much different challenge than Purdue had faced yet this season.
Yeah, and I was, you know, I was positive on Twitter, you know, or and during the recap, and I it was phenomenal that we won this game, because it's you're riding such a high. It was the first game that the paint crew showed up this season. It was the first game that the crowd showed up this season, which was great. And you didn't want to let him down. Like, you know, you go to Maui, you have this kind of like, have 3/4 of the way towards the success, right? And then if you come back and lay an egg, or if you come back and let a game slip because you go whatever 6 minutes without scoring, or you know, 6 minutes and score 3 points, mm-hmm. that's definitely a letdown. And Purdue is a better team than NC State, and they should have won that game. But I think that it accomplished two things. One, it showed us that even when we're playing fairly with some points to be desired, we can still close out a game. But it also, on the flip side, showed that there are things that this team needs to still work on, and you can't pen us into the tournament yet.
Yeah, I think a lot of people see the early results and assume that this team is going to win 20 games and get to the tournament, but there still is a lot of work to do. But there are some encouraging signs, like the fact that, you know,
they're winning the games.
Stevens can have a terrible game and Purdue can still win. Sorry, Andy.
Well, yeah, I was going to say they're also winning the games that they should be winning. Because, you know, the last 2 years, how many games have the score might have looked really lopsided, but the entire time you're not feeling necessarily good about the team. Like, I mean, you can only get so excited about so many, you know, mid-range floaters and missed layups. And so, to be honest, it's interesting because, you know, I think last season they were Purdue was 5-1 in the games. Even like, I was kind of going through the statistics to see if there were any, you know, measurable differences between, you know, these first five games. And while they are improved in almost every category, it's just a slight improvement. So I think if you look at the games at the surface, the seasons don't look that much different, but it's really how they're playing and you know, the way they're moving the ball. And I think the percentage of their shots that have assists isn't one of the highest in the league right now.
Yeah. Brian Newbert from goldenblack.com tweeted out, I think it was yesterday, I don't remember, it might have been today, that the number of field goals that were accompanied by an assist this season has Purdue ranked in like the 15th for that category, something like that, some in that range. Yep. Whereas last year they were like 150th. So there's a huge difference there. You know, I looked at some of the stats too. I looked at stuff like, you know, free throw percentage and turnover percentage, and they aren't that different than last year. But how the team is playing as a whole, it is a lot. You know, it's the eyeball test, and they're passing.
Well,
it so
and that's
far.
And the kind of the point that I was trying to get at, and I was doing a poor job of it, is that this team is so different that it kind of exudes a whole different like confidence and excitement. And I think, you know, once you get the paint crew in the doors, I mean, they're gonna like this team. They've got a lot of good personalities. You know, even, you know, AJ Hammonds is a little more animated and I'm telling you, I think between Haas and Vince Edwards, I mean, I think everyone kind of recognizes the word that they're watching something special.
Did someone say Vince Edwards?
Sorry.
Did you guys see or hear the interview that JMV did with Haas the other day?
Yes.
So I heard about it. So I actually haven't heard it. I still have it bookmarked to listen to. Describe
it's worth
it
a listen.
Like what?
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's you know, it's pretty standard interview type stuff. But the enthusiasm was really what struck me coming from Haas. You know, he was very open about, you know, the recruiting process, like what he loved about Purdue. Why he was here, you know, what he hoped to get out of it. He talked a little bit about his relationship with AJ Hammonds, and he said something interesting, which Hammonds apparently approached him earlier this season and said that it was Hammonds' goal to not let Haas down, you know. And so that's a great thing to say, because it shows that Hammonds is taking on this sort of mentorship role and that he's taking it seriously. And you can sort of see that with how those two talk about each other and how they interact on the court. So it's definitely worth a listen.
And in that interview, it's funny, that comment that you just mentioned, it was kind of a loaded question too, because you could tell that JMV was baiting Haas to say something about his work ethic or how hard he tries. And he answered it so perfectly and it's so like nonchalantly that he kind of de-escalated that attempt pretty quickly. Yeah.
And JMV pretty much ended the interview being like, you know, we got to have you on. Anytime you want, just let me know. So even though JMV sucks,
You know, it was a really good. You're telling me the Indianapolis media is bad?
No, that's like a meta joke with JMV. But JMV's okay. Well, I don't know.
No, but it's interesting though. He I mean, I think even locally, I think he's becoming like a star. I think people are starting to recognize and I know I have a lot of IU fans that are starting to ask about this guy. And
well, they'll get to know him when they put like a 6'6" center up against everywhere.
Well, but the Big Ten is I'm so excited, like the way that he's playing. I mean, he's playing like a man. He is not shying down.
He has an edge to him. It's great to watch. Yeah. Like he comes off in interviews as a very nice guy, and I'm sure he is. But when he gets out on the court, you know, he plays with an intensity that's really awesome to see. Like it sort of reminded me of how Lewis Jackson used mm-hmm. to play. You know, like just a tough kid out there playing.
All right, let's be honest here. So,
go ahead.
I'm amazed at the way he's playing right now, and you know his field goal percentage, mm-hmm. and he's being aggressive. When was the last time you've seen someone that good, you know, start within the first six games, play the way that he's playing and not be a first round prospect or a one and done
2007
one and done prospect?
Yeah, I don't know. There's still some places in his game that he has to. I mean, he's a freshman. You know, he's eight games into it, so there are obviously like I'm gonna start picking apart his game like seven games into his career. But of course, there are things that he has to fix. But he's been phenomenal. He's been everything that I hoped that he would be when like that late commitment happened or like the weird like the decommitted from Wake Forest. And committing to Purdue happened, and more. And it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, if you have or like even in grad school or something like that, like if you have like a graduate student that maybe isn't all put together, right? And the way most advisors handle that, or the way even in management most people handle you know, people who aren't clued in all the way, is they give them someone to mentor. They give them someone and say, here, he's going to learn from you. You're in charge of showing him the ropes and doing all this. And I do think that was first.
You just described my graduate experience to a T. It's a little concerning. I'm starting to realize stuff.
But it's like, AJ isn't a bad guy by any means. Like, no time in the last 2.5 years at Purdue has AJ been classified as a bad guy. Like, there have never been any outbursts. There have never been any character concerns, any of that. It's just been he's missed class or was late for practice or something like that here and there. Stuff all kids do. The biggest detriment to his, like, game and demeanor and everything was that he didn't seem to be in it all the way, like 100% of the time. And that was, you know, whispers coming out of practice is that he didn't practice hard every day. Having a backup center with the talent and the size and the skills that Isaac Haas brings makes Hammonds both fight for his job and make sure that Haas, you know, that he takes an ownership over the success that Haas does. And I think that's a huge, huge difference that we're seeing in AJ.
Well, and I think the makeup of the team affects Hammonds a lot as well, because, I mean, although no one has come out and said it, I really think that the last 2 years have been hard on him from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. Those teams weren't really together. And all it takes is a couple personalities who are, you know, willing to be a little selfless and talk about the team and really to really build that culture. And that's, you know, something that Haas has contributed to as well as Davis. So I think, you know, the team makeup is a little bit different. And so there's a lot of reason to be excited. And, you know, moving forward, sort of looking forward, you know, it sort of raises the question is like, okay, well, what happens if Hammonds returns for his senior year? You know, what is this team going to look like?
I think that's a fun kind of a fun pipe dream to have, because I think before the season it was a preconceived notion that he was leaving, and I think people expected him to have to put the entire team on his back and score, you know, 20 and 10, And you're wondering, I mean, is there a chance that he might, you know, want to stay and you know, continue his development in the college leagues?
No.
No chance.
If you're a top pick projected, I think you have to go to the NBA.
If you're a top one pick, 10?
20.
Oh, 20.
Top
okay.
20.
Sure. Yeah.
And where is he right now?
He's early second round.
Yeah, he's top 40.
He's top 40, but you need a guarantee if you're going to leave. And if you're projected like 26th or 29 or 30, you know, you're too close to the edge, I would think. So we'll see how the season progresses, but I don't think it's necessarily a slam dunk that he's going to be a hot commodity after this year. We'll just have to see. He has the talent to be, but he needs the production to back it up. So
I don't think that he'll stay. And I don't think that there's two different hypotheticals you can give to me. One is that he has a great season and we're suspending reality and he stays, and he has a mediocre season and we semi-suspend reality and he stays. I think if he has a season like last year, which was good, like it was okay, you know, nothing to scream about, nothing to jump hoot and holler about. He's pretty much a guaranteed second round pick. If he takes the same small steps that he took between his freshman to his sophomore year. But I don't see any reason for him to stay, and I don't see any reason for Matt Painter as a mentor to keep him here. He should go, I think.
If you're second round, like you're, that's a big risk. Yeah, that's a big risk.
And the other thing is you take the risk of being at your maximum like attractiveness to the NBA this year. And it's not where he's going to get picked, right? At this point in his career, he's not a lottery pick. Unless he just goes on some sort of ungodly tear this year. He peaks out at a late first-round pick, and there'll never be a guarantee there. I mean, you had Mitch McGarry go 20th overall, and nobody thought that he would – or 21st or whatever, he went to OKC. And nobody thought that he would go – you know, nobody thought that he was a first-round pick at all. He wasn't on anybody's boards. It was just how things shook out at the end of the first round. So – You never know at the end of the first round, and to get a guarantee is very tough there. So I think that I would kind of question Matt Painter if he recommended him to stay, especially considering he's 23 by the time the next NBA season starts. Right. So I think he should go. Now, I'm all for more AJ Hammonds. I've loved him the entire time he's been on campus, but I'm not sure if it's realistic.
I don't think we'll see it. This isn't going to be like a Jim Boeheim thing where he'll trash his own player just to lower his draft stock so he can play for him next year. He's such a horrible person. Yeah. But Matt Painter has spoken very openly about aiding his players in the process of deciding what their future will be. And he has talked about that as a mentorship type role, as a, my job is to prepare you for the next level, whatever that is. And I'm going to do whatever I can to help you do that. And so I think, you know, I think it's going to be an unbiased opinion, and I would be surprised if Painter even offered a, you should stay or you should go vote. It's going to probably, if it's like he's done in the past, it's going to be like, here's all the information I can get for you by talking to my friends in the NBA type of a thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the,
like,
the age
Matt,
thing
we
is,
get it. You have friends in the NBA. Jesus. Sorry.
Let me call my buddy Greg Popovich.
Hey, Greg.
I would pay so much money to be able to call Greg Popovich Greg. Like, just call him up.
I don't think his kids let her allowed to call him.
I think you get one. You know what I mean? Like, you get one. And then after that, you're really taking a chance.
It's coach. It's always coach.
It's always Mister.
So let's just play. Okay, can we just play this hypothetical game here? Of say, okay, AJ, you know, he likes it. He likes it in college. He's not sure he's mentally ready to take the jump. And there's also a prospect that, you know, with the same team for playing, you know, basically staying completely intact, he thinks that they can make a really good run. So let's pretend, what would a team look like year two? I mean, how would Matt Painter play that if AJ and Haas were both, you know, playing next year?
I think it's the same. I don't know if Haas is, I mean, Haas would have to develop quite a bit, I think, to overtake Hammonds as a starter.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And let's remember that and file that away when people overreact if AJ has a bad game later this season, that Isaac should be starting. He shouldn't be starting. AJ is so much better.
Well, okay, AJ has a summer to work on his work a little bit on his athleticism, try to get quicker. Could he play a four and have Edwards slide down and play the three?
Oh man, a four in college is tough, I think, for a 7-footer, because you have to.
It's not unheard of,
but you have to have its lateral quickness. Mm-hmm. It's the ability to step out and guard on the perimeter,
knowing that he'll have a 7'2" to defend him if he, you know, if you know you're playing his zone.
Right, and then the guy that the 7'2" guy leaves to cover for your mistake, then, you know, shades to the basket and is open for a layup. I mean, like, a defensive breakdown is still a defensive breakdown, mm-hmm. even if you have some backup. So, I don't know. I think in certain situations, maybe you can make that argument, but I don't think it would be any more compelling next year than it would be this year to run that sort of line.
Frankly, I think that it's more attractive to have a better Haas and a better Hammonds in the same roles that they are, with Haas being the backup and Hammonds being the starter. I think that would be amazing.
You guys are not fun and too reasonable. I mean, come on, let's have some.
So I think we should clone Vince Edwards and start him at all five positions. It's like Vince. That's it.
And then maybe even like keep cloning him and he can be like the cheerleaders, and then clone him some more and he can just be the
guy.
Crew.
He's a good looking guy. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. He's real good.
So you're into hypotheticals. Let's talk about a potential spring pickup for Purdue.
Ooh.
And so Purdue's only after one more guy to complete the 2015 class.
Is that official? Is he the only one we're going after?
He's it, man. Like, I think that
give the name.
JUCO,
give them the name. Give the people the name.
Caleb Swinigan.
Amazing. The god. The god.
He Biggie. I think it's so that they'll absolutely look at JUCOs, but that is such a hot mess that I don't even really know.
So
let's preface
this as with our chances. Our chances are what, 10%?
I would go as high as 22%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those extra extra 2%, man. I don't know.
I don't think it's good. I think Anish and I talked about this about a week ago. Or was it a week? I don't know. And I think Michigan State is where he ends up.
He's Zach Randolph, right? He's Zach Randolph 2.0.
Don't steal my.
Yeah, it's you. This is you. This is you. This is all
that is
you.
What I told
this
you.
This is all
you.
This is all you. But imagine Zach Randolph next to Isaac Haas.
He is Zach Randolph, though. Is there a more perfect comp than Zach Randolph for Caleb Swinigan?
I think it's fantastic. I think it's great. What do you think, Andy?
I think on paper, we have two potential all Big Ten freshmen, and that's obviously putting the cart way ahead of the horse. But I mean, if things continue as they have the first seven games, I think that it's starting to look like a more compelling case than it did a month ago.
Oh, totally. So and if you take it a step further, then you can extend Coach Painter's pedigree to coaching NBA level like draftable front court players in Robbie Hummel, in Carl Landry, by Juwan Johnson, even though he got drafted in the first round, but he kind of flamed out. And now AJ Hammonds probably next year, and if he leaves, I think it's even more enticing to Caleb Swinigan, because then he's got all of this NBA talk, even though premature or whatever, All of this talk about Isaac Haas being a phenomenal talent, and Vince Edwards on the perimeter, like, yeah, absolutely, it becomes a great argument.
And actually,
well, let's continue the Zach Randolph comparison for a second. And if you guys follow the NBA at all, how awesome!
Oh, don't say it. Oh my God, don't say it.
With Mark Gasol playing the five and Randolph Z-Bo at the four.
Mark Gasol might be my favorite non-Pacer. He's the best.
Such a dirtbag, but he's really good. I think that's an argument that you can make. It's like, hey, you're not going to be a five. We'll stick you at, we've already got a five. We don't need you to play that role. We'll stick you at the four, and you'll have more freedom to show the NBA scouts what you can do at the next level. I don't know. It's still a long shot. Until Purdue actually beats Michigan State in a head-to-head recruiting battle, I can't believe that.
Yeah. What are you gonna? I mean, like beating Izzo is just—it's close to impossible unless you're Duke or Kentucky or Calipari. Not even Kentucky. You know, it's tough, and
it's so much more pain. It's so much more painful too when those targets come back to Mackey Arena and whoop us up.
Like Brandon Dawson and Gary Harris.
Oh man,
it's the same. The fact is that Michigan State is a year in year out ranked national conversation type program. So, you know, that's a different place than Purdue's been in recently. It's hard to sort of make the argument that Purdue should win those recruiting battles. Yeah.
So first, I'm looking at this. I don't think Michigan State has a center. Like at all, they don't have one signed. They don't have one on roster. The closest thing they have is Brandon Dawson, and everybody else is short. I think Brandon Dawson 6'8".
Yeah, he's not even that tall.
And I'm pretty sure he's the tallest guy. Oh, Costello, that's right. So
Costello's not a five.
Though, no, they're all he has a team of forwards, and so I think that's a argument that Purdue has now. You know, Kentucky is also recruiting him. Georgetown is recruiting him. Like, I don't know who are the other big ones. Indiana, but I think Purdue's ahead of Indiana in this race.
It's pretty much, from what I understand, it's pretty much Michigan State and Purdue are the two that have been working the hardest.
But Kentucky's
picking it up.
Yeah, all you got to do is send Cal to a couple. Kentucky's putting out all their horses, you know, putting out everything.
But from what I hear, though, I mean, he's a pretty smart guy. He's not someone that's going to get, taken advantage of too much. I mean, I think he's making a pretty educated decision based on, you know, preset criteria. And at least you got to respect his approach that he's taking.
Kentucky signed that kid with that really shady recruiting thing with that really
shady
family.
Which one would that be? You mean every recruiting kid?
Well, no, the man, the one from like the Dominican or something. Scal, right? Scal Labissere, is that his name?
Oh, Labissere, yeah. So that followed Calipari coaching the. youth
for
team.
Carl Towns.
You guys remember that?
Exclusively for Carl Towns.
He did. He got Carl Towns. Which, I mean, totally worth it because that.
You know, I. Amazing, okay. But. I am all for any sort of Calipari hate, but all he has to do is walk in. Like, he doesn't have to cheat anymore. Like, would you.
He's built a system which. It sells itself.
If Cal cheated, it would be the stupidest thing to ever do. Like
So here's the thing. I think you're absolutely right. And I think anyone who thinks that he's been walking around handing out bags of money to players doesn't really understand how this thing goes. I think if you want to talk about cheating that has followed Calipari, and I'm not making any accusations, I'm just looking at the history, it's always been academic violations.
Absolutely.
It's always been getting guys eligible to play for him. It hasn't been a bagman with stacks of cash. It goes back to UMass in Memphis, and one day it'll be Kentucky. It's been getting guys the right scores, the right classes, the right whatever to qualify academically. That's it right there, man. It's not he's not paying players. He's I wouldn't be surprised if he's never paid players. It's all in the academics.
I think I don't know, when you send Calipari after a recruit, it is hard to imagine that recruit in any other jersey. And you know, with all of the information, I think for with Caleb Swenigan, I think we can pencil Michigan State as the favorite. But with Kentucky on the scent, all it needs is a couple more people this year to get on board. I don't know. It'd be great to get them. And it'd be amazing. It'd be easily the biggest recruit Purdue ever got. Is that too far? I think he'd be Purdue's best recruit.
That's really? Too far. No, I mean, come on. Glenn Robinson. Glenn Robinson was the number two player in his class.
Right. I was trying to make against Glenn, big dog, but no, I can't. You're right.
You can't do it. And even Mike Robinson was a burger boy who was a top 20 guy.
He's top
20. So,
yeah, think about all the emails we'll get if you make that comparison. It's not worth it. It's not worth it.
All right,
I have one more question, actually, that I want to bring up, just so this can be one more question. Long and drawn out. This is for the people stuck on 69, the Fishers area. This is for you. No, so I was thinking, you know, with Edwards playing the way he is, and I just wanted to pose this question. Does Matt Painter's team, I mean, do we need to have that position for his offense to work? Do we need to have that athletic forward? And if so, then that's kind of, I guess, my new like concern for recruiting is, you know, who's the next person who's going to back up Vince Edwards, and when are we going to get him? Because, you know, they don't come on trees. It's really hard to find that, mm-hmm. that person with the size and the skill set. So I'm wondering if that's kind of one of the most important positions that the Painter needs to be keying in on.
Yeah, it's been interesting, right? I mean, I think we all thought that Painter invented that position just because he had Robbie Hummel. And when you have a weapon like Robbie, it was, you know, it'd be stupid to use him, you know, anywhere else, especially when you have Juwan, who was our biggest player and slid so easily at a college five. And I don't know if inherently Painter's system needed it, you know, like when he was presenting his vision for Morgan Burke and all of them before he hired him. I don't know if that position existed, but I think in the post-Hummel era, he has a really hard time constructing any kind of half-court offensive set without a four-man that crashes the glass as effectively as Vince does, that can shoot somehow, that can shoot as well as Vince does, which is fantastic. And yeah, play make and have vision like Vince. So I don't know. I think it's just because we have these kind of people, but I don't know. It's like the chicken, and the egg. I'm not sure.
I don't know. There isn't anyone on the next two classes who sort of fit that role. I mean, there's a kid out of Illinois. What's his name? Nick Rakosevic.
No.
Is that right? Anyway, he's a power forward, but he's sort of a national recruit, so I don't think Purdue has much of a shot there. But yeah, I mean, you're right. That playmaker, that guy who can sort of do everything from crash the boards to bring the ball up. I mean, it fits well within the motion offense, and it also, if he's a good enough defender, sort of fits with Painter's defensive mentality.
To answer, when we need him, I think 2016, like 2016 is the class that we need to aim for someone like that, because we can't afford to have another, you know, 2 years without that player, or without somebody he trusts in that role. And if one of the younger guys grows into that, then maybe. But if one of the 2015 guys grows into that role, then who knows? Like that could be Grant Weather. I mean, that could be, you know, like Grant Weatherford in the Kramer role playing everything, I guess. I don't know.
I think that's too high of expectations. Yeah,
that's the thing. I don't think we have that kind of a player on the horizon. They're rare.
I think maybe a Seth Towns in 2016 might be a guy, but we'll just have to see how that class turns out. Anyway, that's it for the Purdue Basketball Beat. Thanks, everybody,
for
listening.
Be sure to listen to our post-game show and Subscribe to our Tumblr and Instagram, Snapchat, Tinder.
That's right. Pay your subscription fees. It's like $10,000.
Did you say that? Our Tinder. Yeah, Tinder. Swipe right, everybody.
And some individuals.